Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time once again for another episode of OC Spotlight. The one show, maybe the only show, that shows you the most incredible people doing the most amazing things right here in our own backyard. And today, well, we have a very tasty treat for you today. We have with us a private chef. Welcome, if you will, to the studio, Antonio Cardenas. Did I say it right?
Yes, you did. Cardenas, okay. Yes.
Cardenas. I can't do it with that fancy trill there. I need to get my Spanish better here. So, Antonio, you are what so many of us dream of doing. You cook for a living.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I have been blessed to do what I love every day.
So how did you get into cooking? Was it as a kid? Was it from your grandma, from your mom, from your dad, from going to restaurants? What brought you into cooking? When did you decide this is what I want to do?
Well, growing up, I was your typical fat boy in the kitchen.
Is that what it
yeah.
is?
Oh. Yeah, I was always in the kitchen trying to eat leftovers, trying to eat everything. I'm always watching my mom cook. We lived in Georgia for a while when I was a kid. I remember starting to make my own ham and eggs in the morning. But my dad would always come in and was like, "How are you doing this?" First, he wouldn't like believe that the food was good,
and then
he got his dad taxes. You know, he'd come in and like steal a little bit from my plate. He's like, "Oh man, this is actually really good." From there, we moved out to Mexico. Mm-hmm. About the time I was 11, I remember one day I was watching the Food Network.
The Food Network, and yes. You're 11 or 12. Most of us are watching football or cartoons or something.
Here. It was a mixture. It was a mixture. It was a mixture of anime and Food Network.
Okay, all right.
And I was watching this chef plate. A chile nogada, which is essentially a chile relleno with a nogada sauce. It's like a peanut sauce, a peanut-based sauce with dried chilies.
Right.
The garnish for this is typically a like pomegranate seeds. So I remember them placing the sauce on top of the chile relleno and then adding the pomegranate seeds on top. And I was like, I look at my mom and I'm like, "Mom, that's it. That's what I want to do for the rest of my life."
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
And from then on, I was just trying to learn how to cook.
Now, I always wonder, you know, because I'm a terrible cook. I'm like it sounds like your dad. I can't make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. You know, I really respect people who cook. I have good friends of mine who cook. And the majority of great chefs in America, in the world, are men for some reason. At home, it's usually the women who cook. My mother, my wife. But I don't know why men have historically been such great chefs. So my question always is, when you're a kid, do people ever make fun of that? Or they say, "Oh my goodness, would you go to the kitchen? Come on, we're going to go out and kick a ball around or something." Or do they go, "Hey, that's really cool. Make something for me here."
Mostly growing up, you do get a little bit of a hard time, right?
That guys aren't supposed to be in the kitchen. Come on. And yet then when you get older... Oh my goodness, I had a roommate who could cook, and it was like, wow. Or like they say at the firehouse, you know, there's always a guy at the firehouse that can really cook, and all the guys come down and stay at the firehouse. That's really something that everybody respects. I have neighbors and stuff that cook, and guys that cook and watch the food channels and all that kind of stuff, and I'm so envious of them. I sort of walk around like, you know, guys don't cook like this. But I really am very envious of them that they can produce things like that. So I think a lot of people would like to know how to cook better. You just were called to it, it sounds like.
Since I was a kid, I always gravitated towards it. I mean, I love food. I love to eat. Everybody loves to eat, right? So at some point, I was like, "How do you make this? Right? How do you make this work?" And you slowly start getting integrated into it. I remember one of the first things that I cooked, actual like meals other than like eggs and sandwiches.
Yeah,
it was chicken and rice, and I got a huge pot, and I put a bunch of rice in it. I threw all the chicken raw like that, and I poured water in it, and I just let it like cranked up the heat. my grandma walked into the kitchen and she's like, what are you doing? What is this? This is disgusting, right? Try to fix it, but weren't able to.
So is your mom a good cook? Is your grandma a good cook? Or did you learn from them? Or did you just really learn this on your own?
No, I actually learned from my mom and my grandma.
I hear that a lot. You know, this is my mother's recipes, my grandmother's recipes. And you're talking about moving to Mexico. There's some really, you know, great cooks in a lot of these homes and a lot of these areas here. Nobody may ever taste it but their family. But these are recipes that have been handed down for generations.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, my mom is from a very rural area in Jalisco. It's a little town called Cuatlancillo, more of a ranch than a town. okay. And my grandma, like, she has recipes from, like, dating back to, like, 100 years.
Yeah.
And
they pass them down from mother to daughter here. And
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they have a lot of, I don't know if you're familiar with birria. It's been very popular as of recently. They have, like, a 100-year-old recipe that they've been passing down. And my whole life, my mom has been making this. And it's one of the best birrias that I've... I mean, personally, it's my mom, right? So I'm always going to say that.
What does the dish consist of? What's a birria?
It's a stew, essentially. Okay. It's traditionally made in Guadalajara, the capital of Jalisco. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong, but it dates back to the Spaniard dates.
The 1700s, 1800s.
Yeah, where the Spaniards didn't want to eat the scraps of the goat, you know, the tough meat and all that stuff. So you essentially, like, braise this meat and, like, chilies and, like, aromatics and, like, all these, like, you know, really strong, potent ingredients. And you break it down and you just make it really tender, and it's really delicious.
So many traditional societies have some kind of stew where you take everything that's left over, all the other stuff, parts that people don't want to eat or can't eat or don't eat. And, you know, because people are they're creative, and you're dealing with rural societies. You can't go to waste. You can't throw stuff out here. You know, food is valuable. So they find things to do with all sorts of crazy things, heads, tongues, all sorts of other things here, and they turned it into food. One of the things that surprised me, you know, I'm such an American here. I think Hispanic food, Mexican food is Taco Bell. You know, what do I know? But through the years, I've really loved going out to explore different kinds of foods, and I love watching these shows on the Food Channel. I'm a wannabe foodie here. I don't seem to have the skill, but I have the taste bud for it. And such regional differences as you go all over Mexico. One area is fish, one area is this kind of sauce, one this kind of thing. What is the kind of cuisine in Jalisco? What are they known for there? What dishes?
The birria is one of the most prominent ones. They have carne en su jugo.
What would that be?
Almost like a stir fry. What you do is you fry up the meat, mm-hmm. you use bacon fat, you make this salsa with green tomatillos, and then you add a little bit. Some people, I like to add potatoes to it, and then they just kind of like mix it all together. A nice side of beans on the side, rice or beans. Mm-hmm. They have something called tortas ahogadas, which is a like essentially like a sandwich made in like a nice big roll. Mm-hmm. And they drench it with tomato and tomato sauce and like this like really spicy sauce if you want, you know. You know, out there, they like their spice.
I love spicy food. I didn't think I did. I grew up in the Midwest. It was just meat and potatoes, and the only spice we had was salt. You know, that was the only thing we threw on stuff. But, you know, I'm just amazed at the rich flavors that come out of Mexico. See, my mouth's watering even thinking about some of this.
That makes two of us.
And I'm wondering why more of this isn't available commercially, or more of this isn't available. Is it just they think this is what Americans want to consume, so it's a glorified Taco Bell menu, it's a glorified I don't know, Acapulco or something here, you know, whatever the big chains are that push to Hispanic food out. They don't seem to show a lot of diversity. There are restaurants that do that.
I mean, we have the privilege of living in Southern California.
Yeah,
like
it is
a
privilege.
Yeah, so you look around, like, you'll find a lot of it out here. But it also always takes its own twist, right? So, like, everybody has their own way of interpreting what they experience through food, right? And the ingredients are a little different. It just, like you said, it changes through the regions that you go to, mm-hmm. right?
I guess what I'm saying is there's such regional diversity. There's such flavors. Somebody along the way took it down. It's like, I guess, going to Italy, and I'm going to think it's just spaghetti and pizza. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot more.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
When we think of various ethnic cuisines, we Americans have a tendency to reduce it all down to two or three things. Well, that's all that is pizza. It's just tacos. It's just enchiladas or something here.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm getting at is one of the ways you can taste different stuff is by bringing in a chef like you. Do you cook mostly Mexican cuisine, or do you cook any cuisine?
Oh, I actually, I specialize in the fusion of Latin American flavors with Italian and Japanese.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
So. What?
Yeah.
All right. Now let's go into that. Where the heck did that come from here? Taking grandma's recipe and then fusing it with, what'd you say, Italian and Japanese and
yes.
some of the things?
Yes.
Okay.
The San Gabriel Valley. technically. You know, I lived all my teen years in San Gabriel Valley.
Okay.
There's a very high Asian population there.
Okay. Yeah, for
the,
sure.
Yeah, the school, the high school I went to, there was it was majority Asian. So, you know, all my friends were Asian, and I would, you know, we'd go eat pho every day, you know. We'd go to sushi.
Pho for most Americans here, but it's pronounced pho. You said it correctly, the Vietnamese noodle dish.
Yes, right. Yes, yes. We'd go get ramen. We'd go shabu shabu. We'd go Korean barbecue.
Korean barbecue.
It all just kind of like, you know, like I said, it's the beauty of Southern California. There's so many, you know, mixes and cultures, so much diversity that, you know, you start like tinkering with different things and it just like it starts creating new cuisines.
That is one of the coolest things. I'm from the Midwest, very limited palate, meat and potatoes, you know, burgers and fries, hot dogs, you know, not a real diverse, at least where I grew up, Midwest. And when I came here, it was like an explosion of flavors I'd never tasted in my life before. Not just regional cuisines from Mexico, but everything you just said, Japanese, Korean, Vietnamese food, all these things I had never tried or tasted before. And I think it's so cool. You go to just about any shopping center in Southern California, and you're going to see six or eight different ethnic restaurants all in the same place. Turkish, Vietnamese, Persian, you know, all this kind of stuff. Not just the traditional Italian, maybe Mexican restaurants. I mean, they're there too. But how do you fuse this stuff together? How do you decide, ooh, this kind of would go with this, maybe this spice and that flavor and that dish? That's a creative combination that nobody can get.
I had the privilege of working at a Peruvian restaurant when I first started in the industry.
A Peruvian restaurant, okay.
Yes, sir, yes, sir.
That's another one. There's a couple of great ones over on South Coast Plaza here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, the owner kind of took me under his wing, and that cuisine is essentially a fusion between Japanese, Chinese, and Latin American.
It is, because yeah. If you know, now we're going to get down the rabbit hole. I happen to know a little bit about Peru. I don't know why, but they had a Japanese president there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge Japanese expatriate population that moved there to, I don't know, to farm or as laborers or whatever they came as. But there's a giant Japanese population in Peru, in South America.
Correct.
And so they've combined, Peruvian food is supposed to be a combination of lots of different flavors and tastes like that, including ones you would never put together, Japanese food and traditional Peruvian Indian dishes or whatever or something.
Yeah. And that's kind of how I started, right? I started like learning how to like the different flavors that you start, you know, mixing and fusing.
Mm-hmm. Like when I came from the Midwest, I never knew this stuff existed. Who knew you could do this kind of stuff?
Oh, absolutely. When we started training, because it was a new restaurant, and we started training, I was kind of speechless, honestly.
Like, blown away.
Yeah, I was blown away. Like the smells, the flavors, you know, the different types of spices. They have so many different chilies. When they were training, they're like, look, this chili has this type of spice.
Right.
This chili has this type. And then you can feel it. If you actually look for it, you...
And then what matches was it gets lost in the flavor. That's the only problem with fusion food. You put so much together, mm-hmm. and most of it gets lost in the mix here. Find a way that each little note, like a song, like a music, you know, I can hear that note, I can hear that singer, I can hear that.
Yeah, they all have to be a little subtle, right? It has to be subtle here, subtle there. And, you know, you got to like kind of play with all the senses, all the flavors in your mouth, within your palate, and you know, little by little you start,
and
you know,
how it looks and how it smells and how it tastes and how you present the whole thing. Like you're saying, you know, you were blown away when somebody puts pomegranate seeds on something. Wow, that's just too cool. I got to try all this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's art. It really is. I always said food is edible art. You make a piece of art and then you eat it.
Yeah,
you
know, pretty much.
You don't sit and just look at it forever and admire it. Hey, let's try it. Let's get down and do this.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. You get to taste it. You get to see it. You get to smell it. It like really works all the majority of your senses.
Now, why go down this? It would seem like a difficult path. Maybe it hasn't been for you, but to be on your own as an independent private chef, where people, I'm going to assume wealthy people mostly, but maybe not just wealthy people, hire you to come and cook at their house. That's what you do, right?
Yeah. This all kind of came from my father and my mother. They've been entrepreneurs their whole life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've never really ever worked for anybody but themselves. When we lived in Georgia, that's the earliest memories I have. I was about six. We moved out there, and my parents started a Western wear company.
Western wear, okay.
Yeah, so they would, you know, sell cowboy boots, hats, you know, all the clothing, everything. But the way we started the company, because it was a family effort, we were selling sandwiches at soccer games. So my mom would make the sandwiches, and we would all go out, and we'd go just, you know, $5 a pop.
Hustle the sandwiches. Yeah,
yes, sir. And that's how we started it. And, you know, we would work with my dad and my mom like every weekend, Friday to Monday. Friday after school, we'd go off to work, and Saturday, Sunday, and Monday evening as well.
So this is just second nature to you, this hustling, this looking for gigs.
Yeah.
How in the world do you get found as a private chef? It sounds like you've got a really cool background. You've got this tradition. You got a love of food from very early on. You've got these, you know, historic connection, these recipes from where your family's from in Mexico, and these long traditions, things you can make. And then this crazy fusion experience at a Peruvian restaurant that just opened your eyes to everything. So you've got this wonderful mixture of things you can bring, but how do people find you, or how do you find your next gig?
A couple ways, but I do want to do a little shout out to my mentors. It's the Chefpreneur. There's this personal chef in San Diego. He mentored me into starting my business. This was during COVID. He pretty much, you know, essentially taught me how to do all this.
How to price it, how to market it,
the whole shebang. He taught me everything. He brought me in for one of his events when I was first starting off. From there, he started giving me more gigs, do on my own. And he kind of like helped me kind of get that experience to go out and, you know, do it more while I was, you know, still working under his wing. Mm-hmm. And then when I finally launched my business, you know, I have my website, I have Yelp, Instagram, my social media pages.
All of that helps today, because now I can absolutely go see the food. I don't just see a page that says hire this guy and here's the price. I can hear about him. I can see him. Do you make dishes and put them on Instagram and show people, hey, look at this and stuff? Do you ever show up into the
food? I should probably be doing better about that.
Because that's what I tune in to watch. Oh, look at this dish. In the same way that my friends would watch the Food Network and then they all get together. Hey, let's try and make that. Look at this. You just watch somebody create some. My only suggestion, I know nothing about marketing.
No. It makes total sense. And that's something that I've actually been procrastinating for a while. But yeah, no, I'm definitely going
to. Today we're going to make this birria or whatever you said, and just to show you what it looks like. And it could be a little video, or it could just be a picture of it when it's done or something. And then people are like, hey, I want to hear about more about that. What's he going to make next week? What's he going to make tomorrow or something?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, that's definitely in the works. I've been kind of setting up my kitchen for that.
So when you go somebody's house, are these mostly wealthy people that are bringing in for some big party? They want to cook. They want somebody to cater the whole thing so they can get a catering company, or they can get a private chef.
Yeah.
Kind of the two choices. And a catering company brings in all the food, probably.
Yeah.
And then spreads it around. But a private chef cooks it in home. You get that experience. You get them watch and make it. You can taste it and touch it and watch it. And they can come out and explain it, talk. But it seemed a lot cooler to have somebody cook at my house than just to bring food over.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty cool. I get people from all walks of life. I sometimes get people that they're just going out to Palm Springs or Big Bear for the weekend. And it's a group of friends. You know, it can be a bachelor party or a birthday party, a bachelorette party. And, you know, they all kind of pitch in to do a per person, you know, because I do a per person cost. And they all just kind of pitch in for it. I'll sometimes, you know, I'll get, yeah, you know.
Your
get
own
a lot
private
of,
restaurant. Yeah. I mean, yeah. How cool is that?
Yeah.
So and then do you bring it out and ta-da? And then
no, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
we show.
You know, we set up the kitchen to the point where, you know, as people walk in, we're like, oh, would you like to try this? You know, get a little sample, get them all excited about it.
Right.
Then we, you know, we do display tables, or we do plated services, family style, kind of buffet style services. Just really depends on what the guests want.
However you want to set it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was a kid, you're not going to believe this, but when I was a kid, nobody went in the kitchen except the cook.
Okay.
You know, whoever was cooking, mom or grandma or somebody was in the kitchen cooking, that we were out somewhere else in the dining room or the family room or outside in the back or something. Nobody thought of hanging out in the kitchen. The kitchen wasn't much of a social thing. In the last 20, 30 years, the kitchens have grown. The big center island there, that's mm-hmm. part of the party. Now when I go to people's houses, the whole party's in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
And there, it's that whole experience. You're smelling it. You're tasting it. People are jumping in and helping make it and all this kind of stuff. So open kitchen concept here. Now you can see into the kitchen in most restaurants. You can see them making the food back there. It's not a hidden experience. That is the experience.
Yeah.
So I think I can see exactly why people would want to hire you, not just because you're talented, not because you have a passion for something, but because you bring it to life and to their home. they get to be part of that experience.
Oh, yeah.
As much as they want to be. Yeah.
And if they want to jump in too, like, you know, they'll be like, oh, can I help you with this?
Yeah,
can
chop
I
the that? Onions.
Yeah, yeah, go for it. Let's do it. Yeah. you want to have fun. Like, this is supposed to be a fun experience, right? You're supposed to, like, if you want to be a part of it, like, be a part
yeah,
of it.
Well, yeah, well, you can sit down and we'll bring it to you if you want, but that's not the cool thing here. Yeah, come on in the kitchen. Let's watch. Let's talk. Let's
do it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But that was my grandmother when she cooked. I don't think my grandmother left the kitchen. You know, we would wonder where she is. She's in there cooking for hours. You know, she just loved that whole feeling. If you want to go see grandma, she's in the kitchen.
Yeah, and it's really fun. It's really fun because, you know, you get to interact with the food you're going to eat. You get to, you know, see how the whole process, live the process if you want to, you know.
Part so it's of it, pretty yeah. Cool. Yeah. See, I'd feel like I'm making it cheap because I cut the onions or something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You know, I've had people, you know, do stuff like that, jump in and help out a little bit. And I'm like, hey, I was a part of that.
You That's
know?
Right. So I'm, what do you
there's
think
a part
onions?
Of me on this dish, you know.
Onions are pretty good, aren't they? Yeah, I did that part.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you just told me the last few days, I was hoping you'd bring something and you're like, oh, I wanted to, but oh my God, I was so tired. You were in Pasadena one day and then you were in Palm Springs for another party in the last few days?
Yeah, yeah. So Thursday night, this is a client that I cooked for last November. His daughter got married. He had family come in from Norway, Malaysia, like all over the place. There were so many corners of the world that they came from that I really don't remember. But it was about 30, 40 people, 40 guests that came over on Thursday night, and we had this Mediterranean-inspired menu. Mm-hmm. We made some Green Goddess chicken. We had a...
Green Goddess chicken. What is Green Goddess chicken? I've never even heard of that.
So we used boneless chicken thighs, and we made a marinade of dill, parsley, green onion, cilantro, mint. It's just like a bunch of greens, a little bit of tahini paste to give it that sesame flavor.
Yeah.
And we marinated them, grilled them up. We had patatas bravas. We had grilled veggies. It was zucchini, eggplant, just a bunch of really good stuff, Mediterranean-inspired dishes.
People ever challenge you and say, I want to do this? And you say, well, I don't know how to do Croatian food, but okay, I'll figure it out. Or I don't know how to bring this into it. I don't know what they like in Norway, so let me research and bring a little Norway into it.
Oh, yeah. One time when I was, when was it? About 2021, I had to make goulash paprikash.
Hungarian, right?
Yeah. Never in my life had I even tasted this. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I have a friend. He's a chef. He's a master pizza maker. He lives down in San Diego. He taught me how to make it. He is from born in Romania, raised in Italy, and he
knows
grew up
good
eating
goulash.
That. Yeah, he knows good goulash, and he taught me how to make it.
And all these, and they have using paprika and stuff.
So oh yeah, lots stuff. Of paprika, lots of paprika. And if I'm not mistaken, I might be mistaken. It's been a while since I made it, but I believe it's lots of fennel seed as well.
Mm, okay,
and it's just like a process that takes a long time, but it
fennel it was really have that good. Kind of licorice flavor.
To yes, it? Yes, bit, has yeah. a little bit of that licorice flavor. Yeah, so it's a yeah that licorice flavor with the like smoked paprika came out pretty good.
Wow. Well, all right, so it sounds like you can do it all. Any funny stories, any cool stories you can share? That's a cool story. Any other stories of people that you've, I don't know if you can talk about, if you've cooked anybody we recognize or the kind of people you cook for or some other crazy stories? So give us
yeah,
another one.
I've cooked for a couple people. When I was first starting off, finally on my own, I got to cook for the Riza from Muteng Clan. For him and his family, we did a vegan. This was actually a very challenging one for myself. I'm not vegan,
right?
But we did all vegan, plant based cooking
there
that
you
day.
Go. That's just challenging to make it tasty. Yeah. And my wife's a vegan, and it's always a challenge to satisfy that, still make it flavorful. And there are vegan restaurants out there that do wonderful jobs with this.
Oh yeah, and then we didn't only just stick to one cuisine, right? We did Mexican one night, we did Indian one another. There was another cuisine that we went to, but we were just Thai food.
We made
a yellow Thai curry, mm-hmm. All vegan. It was very good. It was taught me a lot about vegan food and how I can, like, you know, start it.
What you can substitute, you know,
branching
one
out.
Another.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. So I'm not really good with celebrities. Okay, I really I'm
What's
not.
What's her name? Madonna. No, yeah.
I'm really not. So most of the time, I don't know who I'm cooking for.
Don't you know who that is?
Yeah. I was actually cooking for the lead guitarist of System of a Down. Him and his family were there.
Okay.
And his cousin was the one that hired me. I had no idea. You know, so she texts me after service because I didn't say anything. I didn't, you know, I didn't fanboy or any of that. And she's like, "Hey, just to let you know, funny story."
you may not know.
Yeah, but, I actually have the text message if you want to see it. Right?
No, I believe you. I
she like just funny story. Like this was you know, the guy with long hair. He was he's a lead guitarist of System of a Down.
There you go.
And I'm like, oh, well, that's gonna be a really cool story to tell my grandchildren one day.
I wish I'd known.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple months ago, I got to cook for Nas, the rapper, and I had no idea I was cooking for him.
What's it like cooking for when you cook for celebrities? Because here's what I've heard. I worked with celebrities a million years ago. I was an entertainment publicist, and celebrities you wouldn't remember anymore. Johnny Mathis, Anthony Quinn, people like that, those old stars of the old days. But even then, most of them, just because they're rich or famous, doesn't mean that they have... They grew up poor the hard way, a lot of them. A lot of them still have taste buds they got. I like fried chicken. I remember reading about, I don't know if this is a true story or not, but the late Prince hired a chef like you, somebody, and the guy quit. He said, "All you want me to do is make you peanut butter sandwiches. This is nuts. You know, try something. Try this." But that was his, whatever it was, he had very simple tastes.
I think it really depends on kind of like what it is that they're looking for, right? So like, for example, the type of services I provide are like special occasion, special deal, you know, you go in there for 1 or 2 days, or we go out for like a vacation where go around 4 or 5 days.
We want it to be memorable.
Right?
We want it to be an event. We want people to remember this and talk about it and experience, right?
Yeah, and then we always give the client the opportunity to kind of curate the menu. I have some set menus that I've created and I've come up with. It just really depends on what they want. So we always try to accommodate to the best of our abilities.
Do they ever just turn you loose and say, "Hey, you did a great job the last time. Go for it.
You
come up with something."
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah. I've had a lot of people who are just like, "Hey, man, I trust what you got to say. What you're going to cook.
You're going to make a statement here. This is me. This is what I dig. This is what I like."
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, how cool is that? All right. So how do people find you? The company is called?
California Dining.
California Dining. Pretty straightforward. And there's a website, and there's various social, Instagram and other things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So my website is www.californiadining.com.
Okay.
Pretty simple. And my Instagram, TikTok is @Cali_dining.
Okay.
I'm on Yelp under California Dining.
And is it affordable for just average Joes like me, or do I have to be the lead guitarist of some rock band or something?
Oh, no, you can make it happen. You can make it happen. We, you know, we can always, you know, work with the best of our abilities to make sure everybody
If I want something simpler, is that a simpler price? Or if I want something more elaborate, I want a multi-course meal or something here that's more... Do they buy the food and you just cook it, or do you bring the food and everything?
The way it works is a cost per person plus grocery cost.
Cost per person plus grocery cost.
Yes.
Okay.
So what I do is I'll give them an estimate when we come up with the menu.
Right.
Based on the ingredients, you know, how high end or low end we want to do the ingredients.
Yeah, some dishes take a long time to prepare, some are 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. And from there, I go do all the grocery shopping. So you don't have to do anything. Okay. I do all the grocery shopping. I show up. I do all the prepping, cooking, serving, cleaning, everything.
Oh,
absolutely.
Cleaning. Yeah, I didn't expect that. I thought you were okay, I'm done.
No. We clean everything. We make sure, you know, we leave everything as spotless as possible.
Now you're hooking me here. Yeah. Okay. It's one thing to have the party. It's nothing to clean up after.
Oh, yeah. That's the most tedious part of it, right? You get to eat, and then you're full, and then you got to clean.
Oh,
that's the worst.
I hate that part.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so you can cook pretty much anything. You got a real cool fusion kind of outlook on all this and in background and all this stuff, from traditional recipes from your grandmother up to these fusion Japanese, Peruvian things, crazy things that you've done, vegan things, all sorts of stuff. Do you bring your own stuff? That was my last question. I asked you that coming up in the elevator here. You must bring your own knives. Why are chefs are always, "I got to use my knives, something about my knives."
Well, I mean, at least the way
I got to use my knives.
It's like an extension of ourselves, right? Like, we get so used to the weight, we get used to like the straightness of the blade, the sharpness of our blades, and it's just something that we're really comfortable with. I do have a lot of knives. I have like 3 sets of knives. I bring in a lot of my equipment. For example, there's this very specific Peruvian dish that I make in a wok. I have a super burner that connects to a propane. I take it to the back. There's
a whole fire
show. I was
going to say, some of these you can't. Yeah. You need different heat and stuff here. You can't just cook it over your stove here.
Oh yeah, and then especially that specific dish has like their flames comes up, right? So like it's like a whole little fire show with it, and I can't do that inside the house, right? No. So I need a really strong burner. I need open air, and just to make sure no one gets hurt or burn, or I don't burn down the place, because that's the last thing we want to do.
No.
So yeah, well, I bring a lot of my own equipment when it comes down to like.
But other than that, you're using their plates and glasses and the silverware and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I'm not currently carrying any silverware or glassware because it gets lost or broken.
What about the booze or the wine or anything? That's another part of pairing it. Do you ever delve into that, or is that to be decided in the future? That'd be another thing. People want to pair it with wine or whiskeys or tequilas.
I can give them recommendations. That's the one thing I do have them buy, because I don't have a liquor license. It is at their home. They bring it. Like, I can serve it for them. So yeah, that's kind of how we go. I'll make specialty cocktails here and there. Just kind of pair it with them. Yeah, we'll have little cocktail hours, hors d'oeuvres.
I'm only going to drink at my age one or two cocktails anymore here. I'm not just going to pound shots like my son-in-law wants to do and his buddies or something here. So if I'm only going to have one or two, then I want it to really taste them. I want to have a lot of flavor. I want it to sit around. I'm not just going to chug it down.
We try to give like...
And hopefully it matches the food.
Yeah. We try to give them like a good experience in the sense where, like you said, like we pair it, you know, the flavors are there. It's a memorable drink, right? It's something that you really enjoy. You get to like eat, you know, you get to drink with the food, and it's like, it's essentially not to get messed up, you know, get all drunk or no. It's more to like really enjoy
that. I can do on my own.
Absolutely.
I don't need your help to do that.
Yeah.
I need your help to put on something that the family, the friends, I and my family and my wife and kids and everybody are going to go, wow, that was one to remember here. That's something special here. That's stuff we never tried. We did it as a group. We got somebody came and put on a show for us here, and they cleaned it up. Oh my God, you're hired.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
All right, give us one more time. How do they reach you? Chef Antonio Cardenas? Cardenas.
Yes, Cardenas. Sir. Okay. I'm on Yelp, Instagram. I have my own website, www.californiadining.com. We're also on Thumbtack. It's an app for freelance agents like myself that,
I'll go check that. I never heard of that one.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You get to find all types of
people doing creative things, freelance people doing fun stuff.
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you for sharing the fun stuff with us. I hope you come back some other time and bring us some food, because that's what we really want to try, some sample.
Yeah, sure.
And if not, I hope you cook on your, really, do that. Put some dishes up and stuff. I think you'll get even more attention to what you're doing. It's not just your story. It's show and tell. Look at what we got here. So
absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. A private chef. How often do we get to, how cool is that to talk to a private chef? Antonio Cardenas, California Dining. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Well, there you have it. One more example of why I got to tune in each and every time to OC Spotlight. We find the coolest people doing the most amazing things right here in your own backyard. A private chef. Who knew?